I'm just like,
you can't fake it. Yeah. Well, that's also true with me. I also have trouble faking it. So
yeah, we can't fake it. Is it because we're Libras?
Yes.
Or are Libras supposed to be?
I think we disproved this whole astrological sign thing on a previous episode, but yes, that's why. Welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage, the show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. I'm here with Evan Kerstell, B2B thought leader and influencer, content creator, and co-host of What's Up with Tech podcast. Evan, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm living the dream. Thanks so much for having me here.
Living the dream. That's amazing. Big. That's great.
You can't beat that.
You really can't. That's the one answer you can't beat. Well, we have to start with my favorite question. I mean, the podcast is called Talking Too Loud because whenever I get excited, I cannot control the vibe of my voice. So I have to ask, Evan, what has you talking too loud today?
Well, I think it's every time I discover a cool new AI or SaaS app, to be honest. As a solopreneur, more or less, I have some help in the back end of what I do, but, I had a nice little business for 8 to 10 years, and then Gen AI came along, and I have just an extraordinary business, and it's all thanks to an amazing collection of these third-party apps and tools, and I actually get really excited when I discover something new, so that's kind of my geek perspective on what excites me.
Well, it doesn't sound geeky here. So let's go deeper. So tell me, like, your business was changed so much. Like, what was the change? What happened?
Well, it was a pretty inside baseball industry insider kind of business around thought leadership and mostly writing and tweeting and posting about the industries I'm active in. So, enterprise IT and tech, enterprise tech and mobility, wireless, IoT, 5G, very techy B2B
in their kind of things. Yeah.
And, discovered through tools like yours and others, I could be a one-man media company and basically turn, this into this being, my point of view, perspective, social media. Engagement into a true media company with, many, many clients and tens of millions of reach in terms of audience and, presence, video, audio presence on every major platform, out there in the industry. And that was just an eye opener, especially with the rise of Gen AI over the past 2 years. I feel like I have a team of about 8 working for me now.
That's wild.
But they're not people. They're apps and bots and tools and other kinds of applications that allow me to scale in ways that, unheard of a few short years ago.
That's amazing. And it seems like what's happening with you is something that is happening with a lot of folks who are realizing the leverage on their opinions and their expertise is kind of greater than it's ever been before. So let's just go one layer deeper in this onion, like to understand your workflow a little bit so that others can kind of understand and benefit from that. Cause like what you're doing now is something that I think a lot of people are trying to figure out, like where can they use agents to help them scale? Which Gen AI tools actually deliver value and which ones don't?
Yeah. And I'll do that without naming brands. Cause if you ever looked on Product Hunt, there's hundreds, thousands of different apps.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into one A versus B versus C kind of app. But basically, the idea is to create a piece of content. Maybe it's a written word. Maybe it's a podcast. Maybe it's a video chat like this. And to turn that into hundreds of different content forms tailored to, thousands of different audience interests. And to do that effortlessly, really, without the kind of work that was typically required in copy editing or in creating social media copy or in video editing or in audio podcast editing, all the drudgery, the grind that used to be associated with scaling up, scaling out your content is now effortless. And so it's amazingly freeing of time and effort that typically I'd spend, hours and hours a week on this sort of stuff. And now it's all at the click of a button. And the exciting part is we're only getting started. You know, I have 8-10 different tools that I leverage for this, and, you know, some automation on the back end. But you sort of hinted at AI agents and what's coming next. And I think we're at the beginning of a journey that's really exciting, and it's going to be extraordinary over the next 5 years.
So let me just say this back, and you tell me if I'm right. Basically, what you're saying is you'll do an interview like this, or it could be a podcast, your own podcast, live event. You create one big piece of content. And then from that one piece of content, you're making hundreds of pieces of content that are designed for different platforms that all, you know, are different ways of engaging with the ideas, probably different clips, newsletters, but like really magnifying the impact of your time and the conversations that you have and the content you create.
Yeah. And in a multimodal way. I mean, I typically was never an easy writer. I didn't write effortlessly. But the idea of taking this conversation in the video word or the spoken word and turning that into a long form blog after this discussion, piece of cake, right?
Yeah.
The idea of taking this and putting it out on 30 different podcast platforms with all the leveling and editing and noise canceling and, you know, piece of cake. The idea of taking this and putting it on Instagram, Spotify, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Quora, and maybe a few others I missed in different formats and lengths and with highlights and subtitles and captions and piece of cake. So it allows you to really focus on the conversation or the content, not worry about the things we had to do with that content afterwards.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then what that means for the conversation is different, I think, right? Because if you know that you can make so many assets from one conversation, how has that changed how you go into the conversations that you have?
It's freeing. You know, I'm not having to think about, you know, formats and all the minutiae of tech, and really just think about the content and the conversation and focus on that. It also allows me to, you know, to scale in a way you couldn't. I mean, how many of us have done, you know, amazing interviews or recorded long form conversations or taken great photos, and you just don't have the time to do anything with them, right? They sort of sit and fester on your hard drive or your phone. And, you know, that changes all of that. So it's tremendously liberating in terms of the time and effort saved and creativity. You know, I can create not just a blog, but social copy, social content with different points of view and perspective. You know, Google's notepad, I can, you know, create a podcast of robots talking about the content I just created, you know, with
Have you done that yet?
I haven't, but I'm watching with interest as it evolves. So I've used one particular tool to create a virtual bot of myself, the way I speak, my intonation, my voice, my likeness. So it can basically read a blog or discuss a topic for me, you know, and publish that as a sort of AI avatar. The things that are just, you know, almost science fiction like are now in the realm of possibility.
As you look through all of these different tools and options for how to scale yourself, how do you decide which ones are worth spending your time on, which ones you shouldn't? Because there's so much promise. I feel like there's a lot of overpromising in AI and underdelivering, but there are some tools that are really delivering. So like, how do you find your way through that?
Yeah, it really is listening to other thought leaders out there and experimenting with tools that they recommend. And honestly, it's trial and error. It's discovery. It's learning. It's getting your hands dirty. Too many people are just sort of reading the Wall Street Journal headlines and not getting hands-on with these platforms, these tools personally. And they're sort of just, you know, mailing it in. This is not a time or an era of just reading. It is doing, you know, and it really is getting your hands dirty with the tools and figuring the stuff out, kind of like in the early days of computers, you know, it's the folks who programmed, who actually learned or taught themselves to write code.
Yeah.
Were the ones who created the opportunities, and they did it through learning how to program. Now it's sort of learning how to leverage the tools, which are in many cases like no code, even like low code, no code, to the point you don't have to be a programmer, but you do have to put the time and effort in. It's not obvious how all of this stuff works.
Yeah, I think about that a lot too, of how quickly you adopt and try this stuff out. We had a guest on the show, must have been in like 2022, I think, and we were talking about NFCs at the time and just like how quickly the people, like if this is a trend that's going to take off, this is David Cancel, who had started Drift, like how quickly a trend is going to take off if you're actually just a month or two in front of everybody else, like you become the expert. And then I feel like the AI revolution has occurred, and it seems exactly the same as like, if you can actually play with the stuff yourself and actually try to see what works and get an edge, like it doesn't take that much to become the expert in the space, right? Like it can happen. Sometimes you just need a month lead. That's enough.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the way things are moving, a month is a long time in this space. So if you haven't started the journey, it's not too late. We're just getting started. But you can't start soon enough. A year ahead is like a lifetime now.
What do you think is going to happen to just like comms in general and marketing based on all this change? Like, what is your gut instinct to someone who uses this every day? What's going to happen?
Well, I think there's going to be a big gap, you know, just like we see big tech have taken the lead in almost every category, the Magnificent Seven, the Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebooks of the world, the folks who master these tools, it's going to be a tremendous advantage in scale and performance and personalization and revenue. And there's going to be a gulf between those who have sort of haves and have nots. And I think it's going to disrupt a lot of people who are too comfortable, you know, with the way things are done or have always been done versus folks who've taken a fresh new approach.
Let's go into building an audience. So you have a huge social media presence from LinkedIn to YouTube, all over the place. What was your strategy like when you started out? And does your strategy look any different today?
Yeah, it's also a question of being in early. You know, 15 years ago, starting on LinkedIn and Twitter and other platforms, you know, gives you a head start. And so just like these AI tools, you know, if you build a familiarity with them, you'll have a head start over your peers and competition and what have you. And so I think, you know, it does require a bit of a personal obsession. This isn't like a 9-to-5 job where, you know, you're at work and you can do this stuff on your own time. It's the kind of thing you want to do evenings and weekends for quote unquote fun. So, you know, social media was always a personal obsession well before I started out even as a solopreneur. It was something I was doing, you know, just for the pure dopamine and adrenaline rush of engagement and creating an audience. And
that dopamine, that'll get you.
Yeah, so I think you have to have a passion for it, and have patience.
Do you have any advice for people who have a unique point of view and want to start today? Like, I know it's not the beginning of a lot of these platforms, but it's the beginning of like the Gen AI revolution, I would say. Is there any advice you'd say for somebody starting today that you think that they should do that'd be different than what you did?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, dive in and, you know, find a, you know, something that you've always wanted to do and find the relevant tools and start doing it. There are many people who are incredibly creative who can't draw and maybe aren't artists, but can express their creativity with these tools. And that's been really fun as well with, you know, all of the creative art and image creation tools. So I think it's, you know, you have to, you know, put on your learning cap and, you know, treat it like a child would treat something new, you know, just really find a niche or an area that it excites or intrigues you and look at what people are doing with AI in that arena. And even if you're a professional, I mean, there are lawyers leveraging AI now. There are dentists using the latest AI and dental tech in their practices. There are artists who, you know, have actually embraced AI and to make themselves, you know, more interesting and different. Photographers who are merging their interest in photography while leveraging AI platforms. And so whatever your interests, hobbies, passions, see if there's technology that will intersect with that. I mean, even Steve Jobs always talked about Apple as being at the intersection of the humanities and AI. This is no longer just a geek's paradise, right? Where I talked about programming in the old days, you know, whatever your interest, background, profession, there's a way to incorporate tech into your pursuit.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was at an event the other day. It was about the future and what the next 10 years are going to be like. And one of the things that we were talking about was the fact that, you know, the most scalable things, basically, that some of the most scalable things a human being can do is, like, you can write software, you write it once, used basically infinity times, or make content. And the content is made once, then can be seen. It doesn't matter how many times it's seen, right? But up until very recently, both these endeavors were isolated to a small number of people who were like experts. And it seems like what's happening now is just that's all going to change in the next 10 years. And like, if you have a great idea, you can do it. Like, there's no more, do I need to find a technical co-founder? You may need to find a technical co-founder if you're going to support an ecosystem, if you're going to scale a thing, like maybe you do, I don't know. Or you want to make content, you won't have to find a video producer. You're going to be able to make something yourself and make it look really amazing. And I think these are pretty shocking changes. And also like pretty exciting, right? Cause like it's not going to be gatekeeped anymore about who you know. It's actually going to be just your own creativity will probably end up being the governor for folks. And so it's interesting to me at the moment that we're seeing like folks like you, there's some people who are really figuring this out and really figuring out how to scale their impact. And there's a lot of people who are just sitting on the sidelines, not even sure what to do yet. And so it is if anything, I hope if you're watching, and you're considering at all getting into the game, that you start getting in the game soon, because it does feel like there's still enormous amounts of opportunity today. But over time, if this is correct, we're all going to end up with more competition.
Yeah, and I think that applies especially to, you know, Main Street, you know, whatever town you live in.
Yeah.
Go walk down Main Street. How many of the shop owners or small business or insurance agents or those dentists, I mean, how many of them are using AI in their business or in their practice or even experimenting? Probably very, very few. And so what we're super excited, I think there's so much opportunity for the average middle America business person to kind of learn this stuff and to get ahead in so many ways, whether it's marketing or customer acquisition or, you know, creating a flyer for your customer, you know, whatever it might be. I don't think that part of, you know, America has really woken up to the possibilities.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because the change in a lot of places, it's like what we're saying is you can get massive efficiency or do something that you couldn't do before, like, you know, basically punch outside of your weight class. And I don't know if you've heard this idea too, but I've heard this idea thrown out there that, like, let's say you have software that can make like a really incredible accounting software. Do you sell everyone the accounting software, or do the accountants actually embrace it themselves and have firms which can be 10 times cheaper than other firms, or do 10 times as much of the same number of people? Because we're so used to human beings paying for these services. Do you actually just keep paying for the service the same way you are, but you're getting tremendously more value out of it? It's a very interesting question. I don't know. Do you have an idea of where things will land there?
I think it can be a continuum. You know, I think there will be many people, including large enterprises, who will start building their own software, and it'll be a problem for many companies who are used to selling shrink-wrapped, you know, packaged or SaaS, you know, applications to them. And that's going to be a big change. And it'll be a big change for people like me, you know, small business owners who can suddenly scale in ways that, you know, were unimaginable. So, you know, I think any and all of these scenarios will come to fruition.
Yeah.
Which is kind of exciting and chaotic at the same time.
Yeah, I guess that's how we remake the economy, is all these changes happen at once. it is also interesting if you think about like pre-industrial revolution, everyone had like a trade, right? Everyone did their thing. And they were, you know, it was limited to your town, probably, like people you could walk to or close by. But like I might make caps and Sylvie might, you know, grow corn, and you might
why
because you like corn, and I didn't even get to corn. Evan yet. Yeah.
Of course.
I'm going to say was a blacksmith.
I could see that actually.
And so, and then we would trade with each other and figure it out, but everyone had their own thing.
No corn
and then
for you,
we've
Savage.
Had this industrial revolution. Everyone's a part of a big thing. And it kind of seems like we might go back to something where everyone can have their own thing again. I think it's already happening, but like even in a more extreme degree, right? Like if you can get your wares out like on the internet instead of in the local town square, you can have a very niche product that can get to millions of people. And it probably ends up being even more hyper specific. I don't know. I wonder if we'll end up with something
like that.
I think
what comes along with that is a lot of creative destruction, though. And so we need to prepare ourselves. And there are no blacksmiths. I haven't seen a blacksmith, you know, sign on the street in a long time, nor have I seen many farmers growing corn, except for like the giants, Monsanto and others.
Yes.
And I suspect there'll be a lot of disruption change. It'll be quite painful for a lot of professions who are white collar, who are used to, you know, just doing sell spreadsheets and cranking numbers and doing the, you know, the farming of the 21st century, just very, you know, rote, semi-analytical work. And that's going to be a big disruption too. And there's a lot of fear of what that means for white collar folks as well. So, you know, tremendous upsides and risk and uncertainty as well.
When it comes, I was going to ask before, when it comes to like content specifically and creating derivative content from, let's say, this one podcast episode, do you think that the derivative content is diluted? Do you care? Is the reach sort of like the compensation for it feeling just like, I don't know. Does it still feel like it's authentically you, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I mean, it's about meeting people where they are. And, you know, if someone is on Instagram, they're not going to read a 1,000-word blog. Maybe they're going to listen to my avatar talking about that topic in my own voice for, you know, 3 minutes. If I'm on LinkedIn, maybe it's a, you know, 200-word post. But it's the same content. It's just delivered in different mediums and forms and formats, depending on what that audience prefers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it's really about. Maybe someone wants to watch it on YouTube at 3 times the speed as I do most of the time. And so you format it that it makes sense for that. So it's about reaching people where they are. And it gives you access to audiences you just would never have had in the past.
Mm-hmm. The way that I say this a lot now is like expectations have shifted. And so audiences, some people just want to watch and some people want to listen and some people want to read. And you have to give them those three options for the types of content you're putting out there. And as I've said that in the past, I've talked a lot about like on your website, right? If someone's coming to your website, they're consuming content on your website, they're trying to understand your product better, your service better. If you don't give them the modality they're looking for, you're going to miss out. And I think what you're saying is like people are in different frames of mind when they're using these different platforms. Right. So if you're on YouTube, you might be more willing to watch long form things. If you're on using YouTube Shorts, you're obviously looking for short stuff. If you're on TikTok or Instagram Reels, it's short. It's obviously video first. And you have to match the message to the medium that people want to consume. And I think the question is kind of like, how do you break the content down and keep it in your voice for these different channels? And that does seem like a lot of what the really, when folks are using Gen AI well to break content into pieces, I think that's what they're talking about is like, you look at the short version, you're like, oh, this still feels like it's the right tone. It's the right message.
Like the essence of the creator is there.
And I think when it doesn't work, it doesn't, you know, you look at it like this is, you often can't even publish it. So that's, it's like, if it doesn't meet those standards, then you're definitely not building a brand around the content. You might be able to solve some one query someone had, but I think it's pretty hard to build a brand if the content doesn't have some consistency.
I like it.
You said something else in here, Evan, which is worth hitting on too. We had this guy, Scott Clary, on the show recently, really great episode. And Scott talked about, he thinks what the thing that a lot of creators miss is they don't make enough. They don't break their large piece of content down enough into enough small pieces. Like they think they've made three clips and that's enough. And he basically said the same number as you, just like you need to make 100. And it's pretty wild to think about that you can even say that today, right? It's like, it was like a few years ago, if we said we're going to make 100 clips out of this podcast, we're like, no way. That's, you're not doing that. It doesn't make sense. And now it's like, well, it's kind of crazy. If you're not approaching it with that perspective, you know, you're basically missing out. That's pretty wild difference.
Yeah. And it's kind of, it sounds conceited to say, oh, I'm going to put out 100 pieces of content, you know, look at me. But it really, you know, the platforms work in a way now that they serve up content specifically to people who thinks are interested in that piece of content and what's contained in that. It's all AI driven. It's not like an email newsletter that it's sent out to everyone on your list. And so context matters. If you're talking about a certain topic, it's going to be delivered to certain kinds of people that with interest in that and vice versa. And so you have to consider how the platforms work when you think about putting out content scale in that way.
And you're saying that in a really freeing way. You're saying you can feel free to put out tons of content because the truth is the algorithm is sorting it to the right person.
Yeah. I mean, I've tweeted over 15 years a million times, and that sounds ridiculous if you break it down. But no one has seen a million tweets, right?
Yeah.
They've seen the tweets
that
are presented to them that are somehow relevant or the algorithm believes are relevant. And some of those are high value. Some are complete duds, but it really doesn't matter. You're not penalized, at least on Twitter. Some platforms, you have to be more careful for putting out content at scale.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
That's a very, very
big difference. I think anyone coming from traditional media can struggle with this because you think, I have my subscriber, they're going to see everything if I push everything out to them. And that's just not how it works anymore.
No, sadly. And so, you know, that's why, you know, big brands are doing paid media because they need their content to be seen by eyeballs. If you're doing organic social, as I am and many of your clients are, it's a completely different ballgame.
What's your favorite channel?
You know, I think LinkedIn has really come such a long way into being a true media platform with its long form, you know, articles capability and its newsletters. And I mean, it has a graph of the entire enterprise landscape. And now with Microsoft, it's just a must visit destination now for pretty much in the enterprise, but it's, you know, not sufficient. You know, there are just other audiences. And of course, Google, YouTube is a must. Visit destination there. I spend probably an inordinate amount of time on YouTube. So it's no longer, you know, demographics and that drive the destination. It really is. All of us are on these platforms now.
Yeah. It's amazing the change.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go into rapid fire. So we have a bunch of questions and just your most rapid fire answers. Ready?
I don't know why I giggle at this.
You just like having things named something, I think, Sylvie.
I do. I love names.
All right. Up first, very tough question. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I'd have to say Mac the Knife.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Classy and classic.
You don't really have to sing. You can kind of talk.
Oh, the shark, babe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And has such teeth. Dear.
It really doesn't matter if you can sing with that one. So that's amazing.
I like that one.
What's a movie you could watch again and again?
Well, it's actually something I do watch again. The Godfather. 1, 2, 3. Mm. I love them all equally.
You love them all equally?
They're all equally good. None of this 2 versus 3 versus 1.
What?
It's a masterpiece, a masterwork. And yeah, if it ever comes on, you know, I lose 3 hours right off.
I do need to see it again. I just saw Megalopolis, and so it really made me think I need to go back. I
haven't seen that yet.
Megalopolis is something else.
I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but that's no spoiler alerts.
No spoilers here.
It was a diplomatic answer. It was a diplomatic
very diplomatic. What's the best book you've read this year?
Malcolm Gladwell's reintroduction or re-release of The Tipping Point.
Mm. Okay.
Really, really good. And he sort of updates it for the modern era.
Okay,
I just
cool.
got that for my sister.
Yeah, really, really, really great. All his stuff is amazing. So
All right, we'll add that to the list. And what's your dream job other than your current one?
You know, I think something like my current one where I had to work a bit less, maybe less than 7 days a week. But, you know, trying to build a little media empire. You know, I have this idea, you know, in 5 years, AI will allow me to basically just sort of oversee and tinker and direct and manage this business. But really, I'll be very hands off. It'll be a self-running, self-organizing, self-managing little media business, and that would be great. So what I'm doing today, but with less effort, I think would be nice.
But you're planning for that future, so that's great.
Yeah, and you know, interviews like this, I send in my avatar. It's me, but it's AI.
Yeah.
And you know, it has a chat with your avatar and done. We just did a podcast.
Now I'm like, are you real? Is it real?
People have questioned that over the years. The whole
that would be incredible. It's like, whoosh. Yeah.
the big reveal.
The big reveal. Evan, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Yeah, just any of the platforms at Evan Kerstell. There's only one of me today. The avatar will come soon, but at EvanKerstell on any platform.
I can't believe in the pre-industrial revolution, I'm a corn farmer in your eyes.
And I think I said I knit hats. So
wait, did you say that?
Yeah, I think that's what I said.
Okay, I feel like I was blinded by the corn. That's all I heard.
I was like, Sylvie, you're going to be a corn farmer. You're going to have fields of corn, and I'm going to be at home knitting. That's basically what I said.
Okay.
I don't know why I love concepts like this, where it's like, take something from the past, and then like, how does this new thing that's happening is going to shape things to look like something that was long. I think makes me feel more calm because it's like, oh, well, we obviously got through that. And that maybe there were parts of that were really great. And yeah, now we get to do it again. You know,
it's way less abstract. It's way less abstract. And yeah, you sort of, it's like telling yourself a story instead of, you're like, this is the story of the Industrial Revolution. We were here, then we were here, then we were here.
Yeah. And it's a lot of it's just, I mean, we're guessing it's what's going to happen. Yeah. Right? Which is interesting to guess at what's going to happen on a podcast. Like I think when I started this with you, I didn't think that that's what we'd be doing a lot of. And yet it's actually like what I've found to be the conversations I have with people in the real world. I was like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen? Everyone's always talking about it. So it's kind of fun actually to talk about the open and get the conversation going in a more open way. And it was great to talk to Evan about that. I think it was like one of the things I found really interesting about him in this episode is he's very matter of the fact about what's happening.
Very. Yes.
It's like old hat. It's like
he could play poker. He has a poker face.
He has a poker face. And I think it's just like, yep, this is what I do now is I basically would have needed eight people before to do what one person can do.
Yeah. It's always really funny to me to talk to someone who is so clearly passionate, like based on the information that they're sharing, based on the point of view that they have, but say things so matter-of-factly because that is not in my DNA.
No.
Well, once again, reminded that if you are not playing with AI, whether you have some philosophical grapples with it or some tech confusion about it, just get in there and see what it's all about. Get in
yes,
there.
I think it is a huge plug for that. You know, we had a hackathon last week and Brendan was doing something in the hackathon and he had this idea for a part of the app that he wanted. He just wanted to reimagine how it could be designed. And so he basically pulled up a few different AI tools and he's just having a conversation like in his browser with like what he wants it to look like. And then it comes back with something like, I don't like that. And comes back with something like, I don't like that. And then with it, he said it took a couple hours. But when you saw the result, you're like, this is crazy. Like, this is amazing how much it looked like Wistia, how simple and easily it fit in with everything else, but it was also providing new functionality. And it's probably going to change how we design some of the stuff we design.
Wow.
And I say that because we've tried a lot of these tools that didn't deliver. And in this case, it was basically he was made a prototype that you could click around with and use that had a fresh design, and that was all done with AI. And so it's just one example, but I think like there's still, we're still at the very, very beginning of this. And I think like, yeah, it's, you just got to get out there and try stuff. And the downside is you might waste your time. And the upside is you might find something.
But it's not a waste because you're learning what you don't like.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, great. There's no downside. It's just upside.
There are downsides. I don't know what they are.
It's like a slight opportunity cost. But that's great and fine. Okay, thanks for joining us. Great episode. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Find us on LinkedIn. Shoot us a message. Say hello. Newsletter, clips, yada, yada. See you soon. Bye, everybody.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage. Produced by me, Sylvie Lubow, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.